You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball on KVOI 1030 The Voice. This is Matt Moreno. This is not Steve Rivera. Steve Rivera is not here. I took it over. He said not to do a show better than him. I don't know if you guys heard last week. I was on, I think, last Wednesday. Steve is out of town. Don't cheer too hard. We all know we miss Steve. But yeah, he's out of town, so I'm going to take over. I'm Matt Moreno from GoEasyCats.com. I've been on the show probably more than Steve would like, but I'm one of the guests on here. But he let me have the reins for today and tomorrow, and we'll kind of see where it goes. But obviously a busy, busy Monday for a lot of different things. Arizona basketball just played on Saturday, suffered its first loss. We'll get to some of that. Women's basketball. Arizona women's basketball continues to move up the polls, has it's on its best start. I believe it's reaching the point where it's going to be the best start ever for Arizona. They're 9-0 at this point. If they get to 10-0, I believe it's the best start ever in program history. So Kate Reese won Pac-12 Player of the Week. Arizona is the first program in the Pac-12 to have two players win Pac-12 Player of the Week, which is another great stride for Adia Barnes and that program. Off to a great start, up to number 18 now in the AP poll. I know everybody obviously had talked about, when I was on the show last week, he talked about Arizona's big game against Baylor. Sean Miller, Sean Miller hadn't had his weekly press conference. He had it the next day. When I talked to some reporters after it was over, and it felt like he was setting up, not that he was setting up a loss, but he was kind of setting up people to, hey, if there's a letdown, you guys know what to blame. Nico Mannion didn't practice for most of the week, has a sore back. Josh Green, the other star freshman, had strep throat. They weren't sure if he was going to make the trip. He ended up making the trip. Nico Mannion made the trip, played the most minutes, so to let you know kind of what was going on with him. But Arizona doesn't get the win. It was a tough, those games are always difficult for any team. Arizona's actually done pretty well in those morning road games when they've gone on the road and had to play early in the morning, and when you would think that it would cause them some issues. But this one, it felt like maybe it did. Their offense was definitely not there. They had quite a bit of issues offensively. There was a few stretches where they just could not score. I believe in the second half, it was something like 10 minutes. They went without scoring a basket, and they had to do a lot of their work from the free throw line. But it was an interesting game to watch. Baylor just looked like the better team. And it was an interesting game for Arizona. A lot of the things that myself and Steve were talking about last week that, you know, could be potential pitfalls for this team. And we were talking a lot about, you know, when you get to March, you're eventually that team that everyone thinks you are in a lot of ways, and you kind of are who you are. I know that's something Steve talks about a lot. And for Arizona, it felt like that. They had some issues stopping the three-point shot from Baylor early on in the game. Defensively, they were actually pretty good, but just they could not score. And I think when you look at some of the common themes when Arizona hasn't had great games this year, a lot of it has been about their shot selection, and that's something Sean Miller's talked about a lot. They took a lot of three-pointers in this game and didn't make very many of them, and that's an issue. When Arizona isn't able to make three-point shots and play in transition, I thought that was one of the things that stood out to me, and I was actually going back and forth with Steve through the game about kind of what was going on, and I said they're not able to get out and run, and that's usually what they do so well is they play in transition, they go fast, and Baylor was just not allowing them to do that, and it really made things difficult, and it takes them out of their game. Obviously, Nico Mannion, he goes into that with a sore back. Like I said, he played, I think, 37 minutes, played the most out of anybody, but you still have to think that plays into it a little bit. But it was more about Baylor, I thought, than Arizona in that game, and it really made things difficult. Tom, what do you think about, you know, early season losses? And I think it's going to be pretty positive for this team. I think we talked about, last Wednesday, about what a loss could do. And I always thought it's going to be whatever happens after a loss, I think, is when we'll really get to know what Arizona is about. But what do you think the benefit is of an early season loss? I know fans aren't exactly excited about it, but I think it could be beneficial.
No, and I'm going to go ahead and say this right now. Even though it was two top 20 ranked teams playing, I mean, does this loss actually matter in the grand scheme of things? I would argue it doesn't. I mean, you would like to get the win, sure, but you were a little bumped and beat up. Your shooting was terrible. I mean, you didn't get it going. Okay, that's a big reason why. The guys just were not doing all that well. Later on, I mean, they kind of picked it up, but I don't want to say there's excuses, but there's reasons. You know what I mean? Things that you can fall back on. I think an early season loss does teach you, as you're still working some of the bugs out, especially with freshmen, trying to get these kids into situations that maybe they haven't faced before. Now, it's not like there was a big crowd there or anything. Everybody was watching the Baylor football game. So that wasn't any kind of learning moment for them, but really facing top competition and seeing, okay, what comes out of it. And now also for Coach Miller, adjustments that he can make. And he talked in his post-game press conference about maybe a few things he might have done differently. He kind of regretted not holding back a timeout, but felt like he was calling them all along because they were still in the game and trying to keep them in the game and keep them close. So, I mean, those are, to me, are little nits that you can pick if you really want to. But you know what? Sometimes you're just going to have a clunker.
Yeah, you mentioned the crowd. It was interesting. I don't know if I've ever remember a time where there's been a game, at least I've covered or even paid attention to, where they're giving away tickets to one of the top matchups in the country.
Yeah, it was completely free, but that's what happens when you're playing in Texas where football's king and your team is in a conference championship game.
Yeah, I felt
2 hours up the road.
Yeah, I felt bad for whoever had to go to the basketball game. It felt like they were, you know, saying, oh, well, you know, we didn't get tickets to the football game, so I guess we'll go to the basketball game. But it was a very pro-Arizona crowd, and it was interesting to see that play out. But yeah, I think, to your point, I think it's again, going back to what we talked about last week, I thought Sean Miller is more about learning his program than the players necessarily in terms of when it comes to adversity. The players are going to go what they go through. They're going to learn how they learn. But I think it's more important right now for Sean Miller to understand his team, get a feel for what makes his team tick. And I think he learned quite a few things, you know, on Saturday.
You know, what's interesting to me is at the college level, any sport, I don't care what, but your turnover is constant. Not quite like it is in the pros. I mean, there's guys who stay with a franchise for a while and you build a franchise around those guys. Every year in college sports, it is incumbent on the coach to learn his new guys. And then the guys that are still there, how to blend them in and make that work. And every year, I mean, you have to give a coach, there is a learning curve every single year for all of your new personnel. And I think it's magnified in college. And I think this is part of it. I think we saw that on the weekend, that this is part of their learning curve to try to get it in gear. March is a long way away, but it's really not. You know what I mean? So the more you can learn, the faster you can learn it, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah. And well, I think talking about that blend, I think the most important thing for this team right now is trying to figure out who's going to show up when, because as me and Steve were talking about, and we were talking about last week, he was talking about Dylan Smith, and I said, I want to hold, kind of put the brakes on that talk about Dylan Smith kind of arriving. Steve had talked about, he'd proven it to him in Anaheim. He had a really good stretch. Him and Chase Jeter both had really strong weeks in Anaheim. And I said, I'm not sold yet. And Dylan Smith didn't have a great game. Chase Jeter, if you would have polled fans after the game and said who played the worst, Chase Jeter's name came up a lot, and people were not happy with his performance on the glass, inside, felt like the word tough was, you know, not there for Chase Jeter. And you know, it makes it difficult when you're standout players like that, and you're expecting them to contribute and have an impact every game, and you thought they had turned a corner when they went to Anaheim, and it just didn't happen with Chase Jeter, didn't happen with Dylan Smith. And I think for Arizona, you kind of know what you're going to get from your freshmen, from Zeke Nagy, from Josh Green, from Nico Mannion. But for this team to really compete with some of those top teams in the country, some of those other top player, top programs, they need those guys to step up. And I don't think that's something that happened, but we'll talk more about this. I think Steve's going to join us soon, and we'll hear what he has to say about it once we get back. Welcome back to Eye on the Ball on 1030 The Voice, KVOI. I believe we have someone on the phone line who knows this show. We haven't burned it down yet. Steve Rivera, welcome to the show. Welcome to my show.
Hey, you might Wally Pitt me. Don't do too well, so I might have a job to come back to.
I know. How's everything going, Steve?
It's good. It's not that cold. It hasn't snowed yet. It's really rainy, but I leave tomorrow, so I'm going to beat the snow, I hope.
Well, that's good. Did you get a chance to watch? I know we were texting during the game. Did you get a chance to watch the game on Saturday?
Yes, I did. I watched most of the first half and a lot of the second half. Yeah, they couldn't shoot straight. The best team to shoot, or at least the presumed best shooting team that he's ever had, couldn't shoot straight, which is not necessarily a problem in December, but if this rears its ugly head a time or two later on, we all know that's not good.
I don't think I know we had talked, I was on your show, I think before his press conference, and we didn't talk after that. What did you make of him kind of telling about all the things? I know I was talking to some other people and just felt like he was setting up, hey, if we don't win, here's some reasons why. What did you get from that press conference on Thursday?
That's a good point. No one's really talked about that, at least that I talked to. Kind of he was setting up the team for not failure, but making it okay that if they lost, that it'll be not so much a learning experience. You know how I feel about those. But he was kind of like, you know, don't expect too much because it could be tough. Even though, you know, last week everybody missed practice, it seemed like. So that was going to be kind of a hiccup too.
What was most concerning about what you saw in that game?
Oh, that's a good question. Most concerning what I saw. I don't think Zeke played as well as he could have or what he was out of. But, you know, Toloko played well, considering. Green, I don't know. The big three didn't play up to par.
In terms of Koloko, he seems, I don't know, it feels like every year we have one of these guys. Before it was, you know, Emmanuel Akot. Maybe it's not a good time for Christian Koloko that I'm bringing up this point, but that it felt like it was Emmanuel Akot, hey, he needs more minutes. And then it was Devin Dutrieve, he needs more minutes. Right now it feels like Christian Koloko is that guy that everyone's saying, hey, he needs more minutes. I don't know that he's proven it to me that he needs more minutes. I think he's done some good things. He's obviously has some decent size when you go against certain players, but do you get the cry that fans have had for more minutes for Christian Koloko? Do you understand why they're saying that?
I understand why they're saying that. I also think that they might be right in a sense that you got to keep him engaged because they'll probably need him down the road just in case he gets in foul trouble and everybody else, and you know, and Jeter doesn't come up to... You know, I'm still not sold on Jeter, bless his heart, he's a good kid and all that, but he's kind of disappears from time to time. They might need Koloko more down the road. So you got to keep him engaged. I see it, but, you know, they're pretty strong without him.
I know last week when I was on, you were making your case for Dylan Smith that he has maybe not arrived, but that he had turned that corner that everyone had hoping he would turn. I said, hold on. I wasn't ready to kind of give him that thing yet. And he obviously didn't have a great game. He only scored a few points, took a lot of shots, didn't make very many of them, made one of them. Grab some rebounds, but overall, what did you think of his performance? To me, it feels like you kind of know what you're going to get. I think we know what Arizona's going to get from, you know, the top three, the three freshmen, but you need those other guys to step up, and Dylan Smith didn't step up in, you know, a spot where they could have really used him.
Yeah, no question. In fact, we had this situation, I can remember this exactly. It's probably 1996 or 97. Like, who were the X factors? You knew you were going to get a good job from Mannion. You knew you were going to get a good job from Green and Zeke. You know those are givens. Who's the guy that needs to step up all the time? And I agree with you. Well, it could be Jeter, it could be Smith. I would hope that Smith would step up more because you're right. Because he's going to take some shots. He's going to need to hit the shots, and he'll be hit and miss most of the. If you don't believe that he's consistent, guess what? You're right because he's not. So he needs to be more consistent. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
I thought also the bench. It was interesting because Max Hazard didn't do very much at all. Jamal Baker hit a three late that, you know, brought him closer, yes. But the bench just wasn't there. And if that's going to happen, you're going to have to rely on, you know, the top three freshmen and make them, you know, do all the scoring. It's just going to be difficult for them to do that every night. We've seen Zeke kind of run into some issues lately where, you know, he hasn't been able to score like he was earlier in the year. And teams are double teaming him and attacking him in different ways. How important is the bench going to be to kind of pulling them out of this? And obviously they have an easy game, an easier game on Wednesday, but then they have Gonzaga waiting for them this weekend. How important is the bench going to be for them this week to kind of just try and get back on track?
Yeah, no question. It's going to be because Dylan Smith's still starting, so it's going to be on those other guys. Is Dylan Smith still starting? He did over the weekend, right?
Yeah, they haven't changed anything with the starting lineup yet.
Yeah, so it's going to be crucial. Officer Baker needs to come in and hit some shots, as does Hazard. That's what they should do, because Mannion and Green and Zeke are going to play a lot of minutes. So the guys off the bench have to hit those shots that they're here for. And Koloko, I think that was an aberration. He's not going to play that much. They need nine guys. They just definitely do because they're going to run up against good teams. The one good thing, I don't know if you agree with me, is that they were down big. They came back. They almost won and played like poop. If that's any consolation, I know I sound like a fan, but that's how I would think later on. If this game was on a neutral court, they would have been able to survive.
Tom's back behind the glass laughing at you, Steve. I think he has something he wants to say.
Well, I just thought that was funny that Steve called him out for playing like poop. But, you know, Steve, it's interesting because I was thinking about the bench, too. And, Matt, I was thinking about that during the game, and I was wondering why they weren't giving more of a run to try to at least let the bench get going, because clearly nobody was going. So maybe you try something different. And after the game, again, listening to Sean Miller talk, he said, well, I felt like I had to leave the main guys in because they were our best chance at keeping us close. But I mean, in a game where nobody's really going, I was a little surprised, and maybe the rank of the opponent had something to do with it. And what do you guys think as to why maybe you didn't give the bench more of a chance, or do you just figure, well, I got a better chance of my starting five catching fire than bench guys?
Yeah, Moreno knows just as well as I do that the one thing that Sean, you can rely on Sean, he's a lover of the familiar. He goes to what he knows. And the guys he knows are his starters, and the guys that he feels are the best guys on the court. And those are the guys on the court. That's not a good indictment for Baker and Hazard, though, knowing that they can hit shots. I'm not sure if you agree with me, Moreno.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. I think that's why when people were talking about, oh, no, is Nico going to play? How much is he going to play? Because he kind of alluded that he's going to play and said, well, we're not necessarily sure how much or how much he's going to be able to contribute. And I kind of laughed at that because I said, if he's on the floor, Sean Miller is not going to not play him 35 minutes a game. I mean, it's just one of those things where even if he goes into the game saying, I'm going to rest Nico Mannion because he has a sore back, he's only going to play, you know, 10 or 12 minutes, he's going to scratch that real quick if they get into a close game, and eventually ended up being a close game. And so I think with him, with Sean Miller, I think you just know that at a certain point, he's going to start to trim down that rotation. He's going to trust guys that he trusts, and he's going to play guys that he trusts. And I think that's a big part of everything that he does. And the thing with those guys on the bench is that when you do have such good shooters and that's your skill, you have to be ready to go. And sometimes if you have to warm up, it's going to be difficult for them to get in the game. And I think that's I thought that was one of the things that you didn't have with Max Hazard. I feel like he's always ready to go. And he only played 10 minutes and he took three-pointers and didn't make any of those shots. And I thought going into it, I just feel like he's been one of those guys where you can just drop him in and he's ready to go and firing three-pointers, and it just didn't happen. And I think there were a lot of things, you know, working against them. Sean Miller really leaned on the fact that they didn't have everybody practicing the whole week, which I think probably did play a part in what went on. But I also feel like they are just the better team. Baylor was just the better team that day. And like you said, maybe in a different scenario, Arizona gets the better of them. And it felt like that might have been the case Saturday. They were working their way back and kind of just ran out of time. But it felt like Baylor was just the better team overall on Saturday.
So let me say this. So Baker played what? How many minutes? If Hazard played 10?
Hazard played 10. Baker played 17.
Okay, so you're Baker and you're Hazard, and you played most of the week because the two guys were sick, correct? Or at least that's what we can assume, because that's what they said, right?
Yeah, Nico had a back soreness, yeah. And Josh was sick, yeah.
So if those guys are not practicing all week and missed a few games or new days, and these guys have played the bulk of the week, and then you get those types of minutes, are you a little upset?
I think you'd have to be. I think it's also very clear, though, and I think that's one of the things with this team that for Sean Miller, when you look at the makeup of the team, I think everybody understands their role, and maybe they are mad, and I think that's one of the things that's made it work, you know, through the first 10 games, why they're 9-1 is because they have been able to kind of blend, you know, some of those guys that have been around and have put their egos aside to, you know, for the betterment of the team. But I'm sure they want to get in the game more, but I also think they understand that what the situation is. They know that Nico is, you know, one of the star players, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they respond, I think, with some of those bench players, because, yeah, I'm sure they thought, hey, I practiced all week and Nico didn't. I thought I'd be getting a few more minutes, but yeah, it was definitely interesting to see that.
Moreno, you know this better than me. The reason they're 9-1 is because I haven't played anybody, and the team that they played that was pretty good was Baylor, so they lost that game. They'll have an easy game Wednesday and then come back with a very difficult game on Saturday. I think we'll really know how good they are at home against a top 10, a legitimate top 10 team. And then we move on into the Pac-12 tournament or Pac-12 season when we really find out how good they are when they play Oregon right away.
In terms of Zeke, what do you think the issue is going to be for him trying to break out of this kind of, it's not really a slump. I mean, he was able to do a few things, but what do you think it's going to be for him, the key to kind of just get out of this little slump that he's in?
In fact, I had talked to people about that. You know, he had started this great high for the first few games, and now the only way you're going to the only thing you can go is down because of how well he played his first few games. I don't know. Just continue to just work hard and get that jumper, you know, 8 to 10 foot, because he can do that. And just be aggressive. He's good from the line. Get to the line. Just the simple things that you need him to do. I think that we had a lot of high hopes early and thought he would shoot, what, 80%, 70% this year. It doesn't work that way. You're going to go up against good teams that are going to defend you well, have better athletes and things like that. So he's going to continue to struggle a little, surely not play like he used to or was.
In terms of Sean's taken a lot of, I put out a tweet because I know you were there at the press conference, and one of the last things he said was, if we're not ready, we're going to get killed. And yes, through the first half, it looked that way. It was headed that direction. So I tweeted that out, and a lot of people said, well, why is he going into the game with that attitude? And why is he even saying something like that? What did you make of him saying that, and what his message was behind that message?
That's being Sean, telling it like he is, at least how he thinks it is. Not giving people high hopes. And he was right. I mean, it was something that he said, and he says a lot of those things from time to time. I think it was just Sean, being kind of honest.
All right, Steve. Well, we're going to let you head out. In terms of, hopefully you have a safe trip back. Are you going to call back in tomorrow, you think?
No. I'll be on the plane back. But good
you
luck.
Can't call on a plane, Steve? Get the upgrade.
I have to fly the plane. Sorry.
Oh no.
we'll see you guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Well, that was Steve Rivera. You guys may know him. This is his show. I think he has a lot of good points. A lot of things that I was thinking about, and it'll definitely be interesting to see kind of how it all goes for Arizona as they, you know, go into this week. It's a little bit of a different week to get to return home, get back into a routine a little bit more. And then, you know, you have the big game against Gonzaga this weekend, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how it all works out for them this weekend. But we'll take a break and we'll be back and we'll talk a little bit more about anything else in Arizona basketball, anything else that we got to talk about. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Eye on the Ball on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Matt Moreno, sitting in for Steve Rivera this Monday afternoon, evening. We just heard from Steve. He's on the East Coast. He said it's not snowing, though, so it's good for him. He'll be back soon enough complaining, doing his usual Steve Rivera thing. But we were talking about Arizona basketball before the break. Another Arizona basketball kind of related story, Mike Bibby, already out as the head coach at Hillcrest Prep in Phoenix. 10 games in, and his tenure there is over. An interesting story. I'm not really sure what to fully make of it. Hillcrest Prep, obviously, is where DeAndre Ayton went. Josh Green was there for a time. A lot of Arizona ties, U of A ties to that program. Dalen Terry, who's a signee, who's going to be going to Arizona next season, plays for that team. They had a rough weekend. The Hoopall West tournament up in Scottsdale was this weekend. They'd lost two games, two teams. They're the number three team going into that tournament, and you're not expecting to lose games, even though they played very good teams. Prolific Prep being one of the better teams that they've played, has a lot of talent on its roster itself. A lot of guys that are going to be playing in college and in the NBA. They lost to Prolific Prep, lost to Hamilton Heights from Tennessee. And it was just one of those weekends that, you know, you weren't expecting a team like Hillcrest Prep to have when they have so much talent on their roster. And they make the move. Mike Bibby's out. They called it a mutual decision, a mutual parting of ways. And it was just interesting to see that play out 10 games into a high school season. It's interesting to see. It almost feels like a professional style type of move, which is really strange for a high school team. And but, you know, it's a whole different world. That prep school world is a whole different world. They're playing, you know, a schedule that's just completely different than a typical high school. And, you know, it was really strange to kind of see it play out. And, you know, Mike Bibby came on board pretty late in the process and was tasked with, you know, coaching this team that is really put together. They put together the team every year, and it's, you know, a different style. It's not guys that have come up playing together. You're trying to fit in a lot of different styles, a lot of different players from different areas. But it was really interesting to see that move and see it, you know, take place so soon. And I guess it's like a professional world out there, Tom, when you talk about, you know, this whole deal about, you know, prep schools and he's, you know, they're letting him go 10 games into the season.
It's interesting to me. Both sides said it was mutual, which is what you would probably expect them to say if they were trying to be nice about it. But, gosh, I can't imagine the politics that go into a decision like this. But it's weird because I imagine, so if you're bringing in a guy of Bibby's repute, obviously a former Arizona standout. I mean, that's a big name. That's a recruiting thing. You're doing that for business reasons. Let's not kid ourselves. Prep schools are businesses. But then what happened in that short frame of time where it went from, yeah, everything sounds good, this is great, you're hired, we're excited, to months later, not even a year, months later, 10 games in, all right, this isn't working out. Something happened.
Yeah, it feels like there's what? More to the story. I'm not sure what it is. It's just, I understand it's a high stress kind of position to be in when you're trying to run one of these schools. One loss does change things for a lot of people because you want to be that team that, hey, we won the fictional national championship. It's something that Sean Miller mentions with Josh Green. He went to IMG. It's not a real national championship that they're playing for. It's a lot of prep schools that get involved in this, and yes, they won, but Sean Miller comes back to that all the time. So it's interesting to see it kind of play out, and it'll be interesting to see where he kind of lands, because he came from a program that obviously his alma mater at Shadow Mountain, he brought his entire staff with him, and it was a really interesting situation to see play out. I was not expecting to see it kind of come through the Twitter timeline today, and then you just see Mike Bibby's out, and I was like, oh, okay, that's really strange to see that happen. Obviously, a couple losses, I guess, played into it, but yeah, it definitely feels like there's something more there than just kind of the typical, you know, this is why we let him go. Because if you're going 10 games into it, there's got to be something else going on there.
And I'm not saying it's like nefarious or underhanded, no. But it certainly is probably political.
Oh, yeah.
So I just, to your point, too, I mean, we don't really know what his contract says as far as where he can go, what he can do, when he can do it. So that'll be another question, too, if he's got to sit out the rest of the year or how that works.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. If you guys have comments on this, or if you guys want to talk about Arizona basketball, make sure to call in 520-790-2040 and let us hear your thoughts. We definitely want to hear from you guys, and if you want to bash Steve, we're cool with that too.
Poor Steve.
No, Steve knows.
We love you, big guy.
Yeah, Steve knows we love him. But yeah, it's or tell us how great Steve is while he's not here. But it's a definitely interesting scenario play out. But, you know, back to Arizona basketball, I think it's going to be interesting to see this week kind of what happens with this team. I watched Gonzaga play Washington. They're a very difficult team. I think they're going to present some matchup issues for Arizona. Zeke Nnaji, I think this is going to be a very important week for him to get back on track, work through some of those issues that he's been having. He hasn't been as efficient. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, with him, he is a freshman. He's just going through the freshman issues, and teams are really making sure that they want to take him, you know, out of the equation, and that makes it, you know, a lot more difficult on a freshman to try and figure that out. He's had games where he's played really well, even with, you know, the added attention from defenses, but that's when you need someone like Chase Jeter to play well and some of these other guys to play well. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how it all plays out. One of the things, it's funny, there's a lot of different sports topics going on. I don't know, Tom, if you saw the women's soccer championship on Sunday.
I did not.
Well, there was a goalie, and it was interesting because she's getting a lot of hate. The goalie for Stanford, she was not hiding her emotions, and there's a video of her online because she was trash talking. I guess Saturday night, I believe they played UCLA, and she blocked a kick and she let the player have it from UCLA right after she blocked it, and there was fans saying that she's not, you know, showing great sportsmanship, and it was interesting to see it play out. And yesterday it was funny. It was great drama. It was definitely one of those moments. I saw it on Twitter. Someone said, hey, it's going into penalty kicks and for the championship, and they were playing North Carolina, and after every kick, I mean, it was amazing to see. If you guys can see the video on Twitter, it's hilarious because it was definitely interesting to see. She was celebrating after every kick, and she was, or after every stop, and she was getting into everyone's faces. She was finding the camera. There's a video of her. She's staring directly into the camera, and it was interesting to see. But it brought up a point where I don't mind that stuff. I don't know if you mind players getting into it, especially at college. They're not getting paid. They probably should be. That's a different topic for a different day. But
yeah.
I don't mind players showing emotion. It's something that we always talk about in the media. And I know, Steve, when he's here, we talk about this a lot too, where we want these players to have some emotion, some personality. And we talk about maybe not letting the college world, especially a place like Arizona, you're maybe not allowed to see that as much. There's certain things, certain restrictions on media and stuff like that. Kevin Sumlin obviously doesn't let true freshmen talk, but we want them to have personalities. But I always find it interesting when they do show a personality, everyone jumps on them and says, no, you're wrong. It's definitely been an interesting thing to see. How do you feel about, you know, players that show emotion, especially at the college game?
So, well, I've worked in pro sports for 20 years, and you're right. Give me a guy or a gal who shows passion and emotion and cares about the jersey they're wearing. That's the player I want. You know, sometimes some of the trash talk, when it gets personal, that's crossing the line for me. But someone who's pumped up, and I mean, you're going for a national championship game, I hope you're fired up. You know, I hope you're excited to make a save on a penalty. Like, that's a big deal. But you're right. We do. We say, oh, athletes are so boring. They're cookie cutter. It's always cliche, cliche, cliche. The minute somebody has something to say, they get jumped on. And I can't stand that. That drives me absolutely crazy because, like I say, even in the pro sports world, you're just begging for personality. And some of the athletes are wonderful and they could be great talkers and they'd have awesome opinions. And especially at the college level, that seems incredibly frowned on. But it's hard to tell a late teenage or early 20-something, you know, man or woman who's you know, coming into their own just as an adult, let alone anything else, to always, you know, holster those emotions and keep them inside. Let me see you celebrate. Let me see you get excited. I don't mind that. I have no problem with that. I wish there was more of it.
Yeah, it was one of those things to me where I said, oh, people are definitely going to get mad about this. And I was wondering, well, why? I mean, she was just showing emotion. And I understand, and I always liken it to me, if I was actually good at sports, I'd probably be similar in a similar way. And it was just one of those things where, to me, it was over the top to some people. And I could understand why some people thought it was over the top. When you know, save a kick and you're going and getting in the face of the person who's like on the ground, you know, crying, like, right, almost in tears. It's one thing. And it was one of those moments where it was, well, maybe she went over the top and then she came back and did it again. So she's doubling down on, you know, this is who I am and
right,
you're going to have to deal with it whether you like it or not. But like I said, I think there's been moments this year where, especially on the football team, it's happened a couple times at Arizona football where Tristan Cooper is someone who's very outspoken. The media, I think, really loves that he's honest and he's open about what he wants to say. And there's been moments both last year and this year where I said, when he said something and I said, so they're going to take that out of context and it's going to be a thing. And it happened last year after he took out an Oregon player with a good hit. It was a legal hit. He didn't get called for a penalty or anything like that. And he just said, you know, it's my job to, you know, make sure that I do my job. And if I take him out, I take him out. And Oregon fans got up in arms about that. He had that earlier this year against Texas Tech. Going into that game, he said, hey, when we go out there and beat Texas Tech and beat some of these other teams, all anybody heard was, we're going to go out and beat Texas Tech. And that kind of started a little bit of a firestorm. And then, you know, that brings the attention to someone like Tristan Cooper, who then says, well, I'm not going to tell you guys anything anymore. I'm going to be that cookie cutter guy because, you know, I don't want this backlash over things that I feel like I'm saying that are being taken out of context, being taken a different way than what I mean them. And there's been moments like that. But I always appreciate when players can be more real. I think it definitely, and be true to themselves. I think it only makes the game more fun in a lot of ways. And again, that's what we want on the media side, is just people to be honest and tell us what's really on their mind, as opposed to just the coach speak and things that they hear you know, from their coach and just repeating that to us, because we can hear that from Kevin Sumlin or whoever, Sean Miller. And
sure,
So it's always good to hear from those players and kind of hear their real thoughts on things.
Yeah, I think we're a little oversensitive on taunting. You know, I don't like a lot. I don't think taunting is part of it, but when a guy gets up and celebrates a play and gets flagged for taunting, I don't like that. I think we've gotten too sensitive on these things and a lot of other issues, quite frankly. It's sports. You're asking people who are out there playing an adrenaline-filled athletic competition to not feel the adrenaline of the athletic competition, and I just don't agree with it.
Well, and it was funny because it almost felt like the general consensus of the comments was, well, act like you've been there before. Well, what if you haven't? And
right,
what if you're never going to get there again?
Right.
Enjoy the moment. And if it rubs people the wrong way, I think there's nothing wrong with that, because you know, that's just how it's going to go, and you're not going to be able to please everybody. And if they were in your shoes, who's to say they wouldn't do it differently anyways? So it's just one of those things for me that I didn't mind it. It was interesting to see how much hate she got and how much hate she's continuing to get online. And I'm sure if you go through her mentions on Twitter, it's a lot of people who are not happy with kind of her approach and, you know, how she approached that game and how she didn't win gracefully and, you know, do things that they would have done. But it was very interesting to see that. But Absolutely. I thought it was one of those situations where it's a college kid having fun and winning a championship that's very meaningful. And if she, however she wants to approach it and take out her aggression or her, let her excitement be known, I have no issue with that at all.
I agree. You know what? You celebrate. And it again, if it's over-the-line taunting, if it's personal in nature and you're going after somebody, I don't like that. But, I mean, the flip side of it is, again, it's an athletic competition. There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of adrenaline. It's just, and I haven't seen the video, but you know what? I'm not going to crack down on a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid for riding that wave.
Absolutely not. Well, we'll talk more after the break, and we'll kind of get to wrapping up the show here, but join us back here on 1030 The Voice, KVOI. Welcome back to 1030 The Voice, KVOI. This is Eye on the Ball. Not with Steve Rivera today, with Matt Moreno. I'm sitting in for Steve, who's out of town. He'll be back soon, though. We had him on earlier, bringing us his insight on Arizona basketball. But we'll kind of wrap up, I think, talking a little bit more about Arizona basketball, unless we want to talk more about Katie Meyer and her antics. Yeah, it's interesting to see just the rounds that video has been taking, and everyone has an opinion on it, and you know, it's been interesting to see that. But yeah, I always don't mind you know, listening to players and having their thoughts. As for those who don't know, I cover a lot of recruiting, so I know a lot of players before they even arrive to a campus like Arizona, and know them from the time they're pretty young. And it's always interesting to see them when they get to college, and just the transformation the personalities take on. And I know we talked about it last week when Steve was here, about Khalil Tate. He's someone I've known since he was probably about 15 years old, 16 years old. Much different person now. I think much more understanding of the type of personality he has to have and he's expected to have as a quarterback of a major college football program. And but I always enjoyed him, and I know his personality has rubbed people a certain way, and some people don't necessarily love, you know, everything that how he conducts himself and the things he does when he's on the sideline or in press conferences or however. But I've always thought he was pretty genuine, I think, for a lot of kind of his time. And I think when you get as much attention, that's the other thing too, when you talk about the type of attention that players get, someone like Khalil Tate, he has to learn to carry himself a certain way. And I think that's the part that is difficult for players. We're talking about, you know, players, college players, and figuring out how to conduct themselves and whether, you know, what they're doing is right or wrong. I think they think about those things a lot. I think someone like Khalil Tate knows that every time he says something, it's going to come up, you know, it has a chance to be twisted or turned or anything. And so I think when you see players make that transition from, you know, being a high school recruit and being highly recruited and having to do interviews from the time they're, you know, 15 years old, I think one of the things that they really start to think about, or they start to hear, hey, you shouldn't be saying that as much. And when they start to hear that, it almost has the opposite effect of what I think is desired, or maybe that is what's desired by the people who are, you know, in the sports information side of things and PR side of things, where they're trying to tell you, hey, you make sure you're not saying the wrong things. And they almost take it the opposite way and go, okay, I'm going to say nothing because, you know, it's, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I don't want to say the wrong thing and, you know, have the wrong reflection on my program or whoever. But I thought, and I know we were talking about it a little bit last week, Khalil Tate after the ASU game, I thought that was maybe his best press conference that he's done at Arizona. And it was, he said all the right things. He put all the right kind of blame on himself in the right areas. He didn't do it too much where you didn't believe it. There's been moments where players have said, oh, it's my fault. And you go, no, we all know it's not your fault. For certain games, certain things that happen. But I thought he put the appropriate amount of blame on himself, was gracious to his teammates. To me, that signified someone who really learned, you know, how to work through the process and knew what he wanted to say and knew how to say it in a way that, you know, was going to appease everybody and it wasn't the wrong thing. And I thought it was very true to him and true to kind of what he really wanted to say. So it's always interesting to see. My thing is always interesting too, is when you covering the recruiting side and seeing some of the things, I'll tweet stories out about recruits that I write and seeing some of the things that high school players and high school athletes are hearing from fans across the across Twitter is unreal sometimes. And it's interesting even covering Arizona. One of the things that I've run into lately is I'll tweet out a story because obviously signing day is getting real close here. The early signing period is in about a week. It's next Wednesday. Arizona's trying to put the finishing touches on its recruiting class, and so they're going out. Kevin Sumlin and his staff are going out and meeting players in their homes, and players are taking visits and things like that. And I'll tweet out a story, and some of the first comments are going to be, "Well, why would you want to come here?" Or, "Well, who'd want to come here? Who wants to play here?" I heard a lot of that at the end of the season, and I think it's always interesting to me that a lot of times I'm quote tweeting, you know, an athlete or that particular recruit, they're going to see that. And you're trying, and the same people who are complaining about, well, why is it so hard for Kevin Sumlin to get high level recruits? And why don't players, they're the ones saying, well, why does anybody want to come here and play here? And recruits see that stuff. So it's always interesting to me to see the fans' approach, especially on social media. I think it's changed a lot. Even in my time, I haven't even done this a decade yet, covering the recruiting stuff. And even that time, it's so different with social media. Twitter wasn't as huge. It wasn't as big as it is as it is right now. And to see just that direct line of contact that fans can have with a recruit, and I really do think it impacts a lot of decisions. And you know, a recruit is going to see, well, why are the fans talking bad about their own program when they want me to go there, but they're saying they don't think I. It's very confusing, I think, for a lot of recruits, and it's always interesting to see that kind of play out. And everyone has an opinion, and Twitter is the place to put those opinions. And it's definitely been something that I've seen a lot lately. And with this story with the Stanford soccer goalie, you see it even more, where I'm sure that's not going to stop. And there's going to be everybody having their opinions and letting her know, hey, this is what we think about what you did. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how she takes it, and if she ever comes out and kind of says something about what happened. But I thought there would be a lot of people talking about it. And for one of the things that I thought was, I had to call my buddy, and I was like, hey, are you watching this? And I think, how could that be wrong? Even if there's a lot of people that you know, are saying what she did was not appropriate, it still got me to watch the game. And at the end of the day, that's what all these sports want, especially women's sports. They want, you know, eyeballs, and they want people to watch what's going on. And I don't think I would have watched that soccer match and had a huge interest in it if not for, you know, this goalie and seeing this thing going on. So whatever the case was, I mean, people will make of it what they will, but definitely an interesting scenario to see that kind of play out. But as far as Arizona goes, it'll be interesting to see Wednesday night. They have a game coming up. Sean Miller is going to talk tomorrow afternoon. We'll get his thoughts on what, you know, is going on, what's on his mind. A lot of, you know, the Tuesday press conferences or the weekly press conferences after a game are going to be a lot of similar things. I know, Tom, you mentioned you watched what he had to say after the game, but it'll be interesting to see what he has to say after, you know, they've gotten back, had some time to relax, and he's had a chance to watch some game film, what his actual thoughts are on what happened against Baylor. And we'll kind of see what he has to say. But what do you think can be taken away from that, from what you saw Saturday the most? What do you think is the one thing that you'd be interested to hear from Sean Miller, his thoughts on?
I want to know, and actually this is a good question for you as well, and for everybody listening to think about as we march towards the next game here, but do you give these guys a pass for everything that was going on? Like I said in the first segment, not excuses, but there were reasons. And if you want to lean on those reasons, you can, you know, of everything that was going on in the week and the injuries and the illness and whatever, and, you know, the actual performance of the game. But I want to know if Sean Miller is concerned, if he thinks it's just a blip on the radar. And no matter what his response to that is, my follow-up would be, okay, what are you going to do to change it? Because you can't play like that going forward. Something has to be different. Are you going to tell me that what has to be different is player performance and these guys just need to be better and everything is sound? Or are you going to tell me, hey, we're going to make a couple of changes here and maybe a couple of tweaks, and obviously not the lineup really. I mean, if those guys are healthy, they're going. But I want to hear, okay, here's what we're going to do moving forward to change this.
Yeah, no, I'm always interested to see how he approaches these kinds of press conferences and how he approaches his first time to talk to the media after a game like that, because what I thought I was going to hear after the Baylor game is what I thought we saw at halftime and what he looked like during the timeouts during that first half, where it was going to be all fire and brimstone. I thought for sure he was going to, you know, light his team up after the game and talk about every single thing that went wrong, and it just wasn't that way. He didn't seem as angry as I thought. Maybe
I was surprised. Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, no, I was expecting to hear someone who was very angry about the game and the result. But like we talked about with Steve, maybe he was, you know, maybe he had an idea that, hey, it could go this way. We haven't had everybody that we wanted to have practice. And he leaned on that, at least in the portion that I heard. He leaned on, you know, they just didn't have everybody the entire week. And that throws everything off for everybody. And I think that's one of those things, too, that I was interested to see in this road game was the routine. And it kind of started when they went to Anaheim. And I said, that'll be the thing that you can learn about more, because there's so much in a routine. Arizona, as everyone knows, as Arizona fans always talk about, they don't leave McHale much during the non-conference portion. And whether fans like it or not, that's going to continue to happen. But when you do that with a young team, and I think it's done on purpose because you have, you know, a young team like this, and you know, it gives you a chance to stay in a routine. And they got out of that routine, and we'll kind of see what it means this week as they get back into it and maybe get a chance to kind of catch their feet under them a little bit more. But we'll talk about this, I'm sure, a little bit more after Sean Miller's press conference tomorrow on Tuesday. I'll be back for one more day, and we'll maybe we'll have a guest on tomorrow as well. But I appreciate you guys sticking with me and listening as I sit in for Steve here on 1030 The Voice KVOI. Have a good rest of your Monday, and we will catch you tomorrow.